I hope you can see this because I'm doing it as hard as I can.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 49, featuring Ron, Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and Michael Kupperman. Need an original piece of art? Ever fancy being drawn? Well, Pat Loika can make it happen. Pat's rates are affordable and satisfaction is guaranteed. Mention this ad and get 20% off your first order. For samples of Pat's work, see the covers of Sarcastic Voyage episodes 13, 36, 47, and 48, or listen to these Pat's testimonials from satisfied customers. Pat's testimonials? Did Matt write this?
I'm the genius creator of an acclaimed podcast. Pat Loik has drawn me as a Ghostbuster, a member of the Justice League, well, a Justice League, and he's even depicted me in those tiny shorts our voice guy obsesses over for some reason. Thanks, Pat!
He took one of the most painful, embarrassing moments of my life and captured it perfectly on paper. Thanks bunches, Pat Loika.
Send all inquiries to patloika@gmail.com. That's P-A-T-L-O-I-K-A. Introduction.
Hi. Hello. Yes.
How's it going?
How you doing? We have some exciting news. We're going to save that for later. Oddly enough, for the complaints section. Mm-hmm. But we are really excited.
It's so awesome.
It really is. It is super exciting. Actually, we're excited for a couple of reasons. For that, which we'll get to. And because we have, in our increasing efforts to get more and more legitimate guests, not to disparage the legitimacy of anyone who's come before, except Flonk. He doesn't count. Mm-hmm. But anyone else, we have someone with his own Wikipedia page. That's how I've decided to say that this guy is more legitimate.
Well, a Wikipedia page that lasted for more than a week.
Exactly. I mean, we could make our own Wikipedia page and it would just disappear, but this guy's is real because he's actually done things.
You guys should make us a Wikipedia page.
We will be speaking to Mr. Michael Kupperman, mm-hmm. the brain behind Tales Designed to Thrizzle, a great comic book, an Adult Swim show called Snake and Bacon, which was fantastic strangeness right up our alley.
He's done some short work for both Marvel and DC.
Yeah, and a bunch of other stuff that you should definitely check out.
Widely referenced on said Wikipedia page.
Right, exactly. I didn't have it in front of me, and I'm drawing a blank here, but it's all reputable stuff. He's done stuff for like the New Yorker, as I recall, and like serious publications. The guy's
the actual New Yorker, folks.
Yeah, not just the New York-esque.
Not a New Yorker.
No, the New Yorker. and somehow, oddly enough, we talk occasionally on Twitter, and I said, "Hey, would you mind being on our show?" And his exact words were, "I'd love to." So that's coming up, and we're pretty excited.
Yep.
I got to say, we're actually a little more excited about the other thing, but that's no slight on Mr. Kupperman at all. but we'll be kissing his ass in a few minutes, so enough
yes,
of that for now.
Stay tuned for that.
Another announcement we have here. A few weeks ago, we had my ex-wife on. That show went really well and went over quite well. Talked about bad movies, of course. In that show, we put forward our first contest mm-hmm. To guess the name of the obscure, awful Japanese movie that she was talking about, and someone did.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I should say for the record, technically, Angel came up with the title first.
Yep,
Matt's girlfriend.
She doesn't
Angel.
Count.
No, and you know, like any broadcast enterprise, you have to say, you know, members of the staff and their families, blah 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 blah, are not eligible. And you know, for the record, she said, "I don't want the prize. I just think the movie is this." And she was right. But actually, one of the other listeners, one of the many people named Black Mage.
One of the Legion of Black Mages.
Yeah, who knows? And it turns out this is not actually Black Mage on Twitter. It's the other guy whose email says that he's Black Mage, but he's not, which is not at all confusing.
Actually, Kid Icarus.
Yeah. So Brandon, Kid Icarus, correctly guessed the movie, which is, the English title is Girl Hell 1999.
Which, from the sound of it, was fairly accurate.
Yeah.
Except the 1999 one, that sort of didn't make it.
No, I think it was made in, it was made in 1999, so there's that.
Oh, well, okay, so accurate.
Yes. The, and I'm sure...
Thanks, Japan, for your perfectly accurate titles.
The actual Japanese title is something I would not even begin to be able to read. It's, yeah, it's very long, and there are more words in there than Girl Hell 1999, and I wonder what sort of hidden atrocities. I assume this word that's in here three times must mean rape.
Let's see, your translation is much hating of female genitalia.
Rape
for much coming.
Ah.
1999.
God damn it, Japan. Brandon, you do win. No kidding. We got your address. We will be sending you a prize. I don't want to say what it is yet in case we haven't gotten it to you as of this broadcast, but, we will definitely be sharing that with the audience. We're pretty happy with it. Matt came up with a great idea, and, it'll be going out to you soon. So thanks for that.
So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
For one of you.
Exactly. For the rest of you, I actually do like the idea of doing the occasional contest. I think we'll have to do that again and come up with increasingly bizarre things to send people. And again, I am not one of, like, I don't think we should be one of those shows that, like, sends someone an empty envelope or, like, a, you know.
We're not Stan Lee.
Right, exactly. I really do want to send them prizes when we say we're going to do that. And,
as much as I wish I was.
Well, as much as we all wish we were. Who was it? You and I were discussing off the air who we would team up. Was it Stanley and Vincent Price?
That would be so awesome.
In some kind of strange...
on the road to Emerald City Con.
Yeah, narrating their adventures on the bus or whatever. Or am I just thinking bus because of that Simpsons football episode?
Quiet, Daniel.
No, Jody.
That was it. Quiet, Jody. You're not helping.
Right.
Give me some gas, Uncle Vince.
Unfortunately, we can't do either Stan Lee's or Vincent Price's voice, but yeah, it was. I guess it was one of those things you had to be there for.
Imagine it in your mind's eye. I think you'll find it pretty good.
Tiny pencil-thin mustaches, ridiculously colorful narration. It all comes together. Lots of alliteration, lots of horrible puns.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a spectacle.
And delicious food, because Vincent Price could cook.
Could he really?
He wrote a cookbook.
Oh God!
Him and his wife traveled the
world. All right, hang on, wife.
Yeah,
dude. If anybody screams,
I think that Vincent Price is an aging pedophile. But
first of all, he's dead, so we'll at least give him
okay,
the.
Okay, so a rotting pedophile.
Right, but really, yes, look at him. I mean, look at him. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page now. So he's a legitimate guest because he has a Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. And
I would love to get him on the show.
Yeah, of course. Me too. But he's been dead since 1993. So
our best guests are dead.
Probably not. Batman's not dead.
That's true.
Look at that. He did a bunch of movies with Roger Corman. There's a shock.
I need money.
But
to finance my cooking.
I don't. I'm looking for cookbook, and I don't see. Oh no, noted gourmet cook. You're right.
There you go.
Several cookbooks, and hosted a cookery TV show, Cooking Price Wise. Yeah, we're definitely going to have to discuss
all right,
more.
So instead of actually doing a show today, we're just going to watch that.
Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Kupperman. We'll talk to you another time.
Take out the turkey and baste it thoroughly.
I just picture him doing lots of horrible, like, Crypt Keeper puns, only in his voice instead of that shrieky voice.
I know which one I prefer.
Well, of course. You have a... I mean, Vincent Price is one of your touchstones, right? He's one of your, like, you know, kid strokers. He's one of your guys.
Yes, he's one of my kid strokers.
I'm just not letting that phrase go.
Nope.
But, no, I mean, he's, you know, like in the Matt pantheon of, like, Ghostbusters, Batman, Cthulhu, like, Vincent Price is way up there.
Man, if they could all just be on an episode of Ghostbusters, that would be awesome.
Well, Cthulhu was.
I got Cthulhu, and I'm pretty sure fake Vincent Price showed up at some point.
There must have been some kind of a fanfic I'll just Google this here, Batman.
I know he was on Scooby-Doo for like an entire season.
Well, that's not, you know, wasn't that Adam West doing his voice at that point?
Probably, or Casey Kasem.
Let's see, Batman versus Venkman. I'll just click this here.
Versus Alien versus Predator.
God damn it, I hate the internet. There's nothing good there. All right, that's enough of our rambling. Enough of us, enough of you listening to us Google things.
You can get that from any podcast.
Exactly. That's not in my notes, but... Oh, and one more quick thing. This is show 49, meaning we are one episode away from the huge, meaningless milestone, show 50. And we do indeed have something extravagant planned for you, so...
Worlds will live, worlds will die, Supergirl will die like 8 times.
We will kill Supergirl so many times. So look forward to that. And that's about all. So
enjoy the interview.
Enjoy, won't we? Panel discussion. All right, our guest today is Michael Kupperman. Michael, thank you for being with us.
Thank you
for having me. Yeah, absolutely. This is kind of a big deal for us. We told you this before. You were sort of the first legitimate guest that we've had, and I mean, we got a lot of talented friends. We know a lot of people who can do a lot of stuff, but you
think that everyone else who's ever been on the show.
Yeah, really. But you, I mean, you got your comic Tales Designed to Thrizzle. You got the pilot for Adult Swim, Snake and Bacon, and apparently talking to you in the pre-show, you have done 86,000 other things that just amaze me. You're just all over the damn place, and gotta say, a little intimidated to be talking to you now, but I do appreciate you being with us here.
I'm just excited.
So I guess first we should talk about Thrizzle, which is sort of your ongoing comic that you do. And for people who haven't read it before, for people who don't know what it is, I got to wonder, how the hell do you sell this? How do you tell people, like, how do you tell, like, somebody's mom, oh, well, this is what I do?
I usually say it's like Monty Python. That's a kind of example that I think is easily graspable. It's also the answer I use when they ask how dirty it is. It's like Monty Python. You know, they're a little bit dirty here and there, but, you know, not that dirty, really.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, sex blimps aren't exactly... completely clean, but you know, there's the
but I'm not trying to be dirty or certainly erotic. Yeah.
Sure.
But it is funny because New York Magazine last year called me the dirtiest cartoonist.
Really?
Really?
I thought was overstating it quite a bit.
Yeah, no kidding.
I guess they've never seen Johnny Ryan.
Yeah.
Well, and you were telling us in our little pre-show chat there that at one point for a while you were working for Screw Magazine. So, I mean...
Yeah, early on, that was one of my first gigs. A lot of the underground cartoonists worked for Screw. They'd hire anyone, and they weren't afraid of being sued. So it was a lot of fun to, you know, draw Disney stuff or whatever for them.
That's got to open up a lot of freedom for just, you know, being able to do whatever you feel like.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, it was great. I did a Disney 42nd Street, actually, when you know, Disney was changing 42nd Street. And I did about 60 Disney characters as pimps and prostitutes. And,
wow.
Pamphlet sellers.
Now, were you allowed to just draw them exactly as they appeared? Did you have to make them slightly off parody's sake? Or,
no,
really?
You could draw them exactly as they appeared, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Screw is not scared of lawsuits.
Now, how does, I mean, I guess satire law kind of covers you with that stuff. And, I mean, were they ever sued? Were they ever brought to court? Were they ever, I mean, does anyone ever call them out on?
The big lawsuit for them was, 86 when they were sued by Pillsbury for doing an obscene version of the Pillsbury Doughboy and Pillsbury lost.
Wow.
And after that, no company really wanted to get involved with them.
Well, I mean, geez,
No,
it's fine. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying it's unusual in publishing because most magazines are so scared of even the possibility of legal action.
Well, sure.
That they wouldn't contemplate doing anything. I did this one job for a business magazine a few years ago when I was working for business magazines a lot. And it was about China. So I said, I want to do a kind of version of the Tintin in Tibet cover. Mm-hmm. And so I did a sketch and they were like, that's great. And then... I handed in the final, and about 45 minutes later, there was an email saying, someone has just brought to my attention that this looks a lot like a famous Belgian comic.
And of course you said, obviously the Smurfs. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, that was incredible. Their lawyers got involved and it was just very weird.
So now, would a business magazine, like, I mean, they wouldn't even bother, I guess, trying to fight anything like that. They just, I mean, their natural stance is to back down.
Companies have lawyers, and the lawyers want to show how important they are.
Right.
Saying, no, you can't do that because you'll get sued.
Right. Now, it's weird because you hear sort of through pop culture, I mean, there's been so many, you know, I mean, The Simpsons and South Park and all that go on and on about how they're not allowed to talk about Disney. I wonder if they've had, you know, bad experiences, like maybe it's, I don't know, could it be worse now, or is it still just one of those just lawyer posturing things, do you think?
I think, well, a lot of copyright enforcement is just lawyer posturing. They just send out a letter and, you know, tell you not to do it.
And people see lawyer stationary and freak the fuck out and back down?
Yeah.
Freak out, yeah, of course. It's perfectly normal
right.
reaction to have. But, yeah, I don't know if Disney is more litigious than it was in the 80s. It was famous for issuing, I think, 3 lawsuits a day.
Wow.
In an elementary school where they painted a Disney mural.
Right.
So
I remember that. It was in the – do you remember the old book of lists that they used to print in the 70s?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic, like, bathroom book, basically. They had one of the lists that I just went read over and over again because I just could not believe it was the top, like, messed up Disney lawsuits, and that was one of them. And I think the worst one to me was the hometown of A.A. Milne put up a black bear cub statue to commemorate Winnie the Pooh, and Disney made them take it down. It looked nothing like their version of Winnie the Pooh, but
well, you don't want to confuse people with the real Winnie the Pooh.
No, I mean, you know, a black bear cub is obviously unreal.
You don't want to give the impression that Disney is a sinister corporation, but I was amazed when I went to the grocery store recently and they're selling foodstuffs now. There were Disney eggs.
Oh, Lord.
I looked online, they sell all kinds of other foods now. So they're also getting into the food market.
Oh, that's horrible. And
really weird, yeah.
And you've recently had a kid, right? There's a...
Yeah.
You have a baby.
Yeah, he turns 1 year old tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, wow. Happy birthday.
Yeah.
So I imagine as a parent, that's obviously a concern for you, just that insidiousness, that inevitable, you know, I must have everything with the mouse ears on it kind of thing.
Yeah, that's pretty omnipresent. I mean, there are no diapers without cartoon characters on them that I've seen.
Really?
But, everything has cartoon characters on it. But I think it must be much worse for a girl these days, but with all the princesses stuff.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
See, now that seems to me like a lucrative market for somebody like you. I mean, you know, you're looking to pick up a couple extra bucks, doodle on a diaper, and, you know, there you go, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
why not? Yeah.
You must have a character that would be perfectly suited.
I need a new marketing director, definitely.
That's fantastic. But I mean, looking at like there was a recent episode of South Park where they did a Disney thing, and, you know, that show does over the top stuff all the time. And it's like, oh, no, they're talking about abortion. Oh, no, they're talking about this. And I honestly can't remember having a more shocked reaction than I did when they did an episode about Disney and they had Mickey Mouse like smacking people around and swearing. And I was more shocked and horrified at that than I was by like when they jerked off the dog or when they, you know, like, oh, my God, they got Mickey Mouse on their show. This is scandalous. And that's just how brainwashed we've become. Like, don't touch Disney, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, satire is protected, and, you know, I wish more people would stand up for it. South Park does a great job, though.
Mm.
Yeah, that just, like I said, I just can't believe I was more shocked by that than...
Well, it's just that fear thing again, you know, it's just like, well, these things, you can't touch them, because people get sued like this stuff all the time.
Yeah, it's gotten and very murky, which, of course, is what the lawyers want. They want
yeah, exactly.
Sure. Intimidated. Well, and it seems particularly strange with Disney, a company that's kind of built a lot of their empire on more public domain type stuff. I mean, fairy tales and you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, most all of their sort of early hits were, you know, old classic fairy tales. You could put out a version of Pinocchio if you want, or Snow White, or, you know, whatever. They don't own those.
I believe that if you're pushing your imagery out to such a level that it's on, you know, kids' underpants and eggs.
Right.
You know, people should be allowed to take it and make their own versions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's... crazy talk, maybe, but, you know.
No, I definitely respect
and
that.
And I love crazy Disney stuff. You know, there's some of it around. I mean, there's that famous Wally Wood picture.
Ah, yes.
You can find online really easily.
What is that? I don't know that.
Oh, dude, you haven't seen this?
I may have.
Disney
I just
orgy.
Oh man,
I'm not sure that I have actually.
That will be in the show notes. Hang on a second.
Yeah, no problem. I know there's a book that I read. It's been some time ago now. It was some generic title like The Dark Side of Disney or something like that. But they go on and on, and we've talked about this on the show before about stuff that happens in the park. Like when you dial 911 in a Disney park, it doesn't go to the police or fire or whatever. It goes to park security.
Right.
Because apparently they want to handle all that stuff internally so there's no lawsuits.
Right. Which is unsettling.
I picking up a phone and calling for help and having, you know, Goofy and Mickey run out there to give you, you know, medical aid. It just, it, you know.
They like control. I heard a hilarious story once. This German performance artist told me he went to Disneyland mm-hmm. and went up to Mickey and asked him to sign a piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
But the piece of paper was actually a form in German giving him permission to punch Mickey in the stomach.
That's fantastic. I'm looking at this Wally Wood picture now. That's amazing. Yeah. Now, when was this done? Is this is this an old thing? Is this a recent thing?
It was done in the late 60s for the Realist.
Uh-huh.
The kind of hippie acid paper.
Right. That is fantastic. Now, are there still? I mean, I'm going to admit I'm very naive about about underground cartooning and comics and that kind of thing. Are there still publications like this or like Screw or like I don't know? I even want to say like Heavy Metal. Are there still magazines out there that publish this kind of stuff?
Not so much. Not so much. No, they're less all the time. The one actually that all the undergrounders and cartoonists in New York worked for until recently was Nickelodeon.
Really.
Ran a lot of comics, and it was really fun. I did two 3D comics for them, which was an amazing experience.
Oh, neat.
But they folded about 8 months ago.
Oh, that's too bad. Now, that's just sort of the general, like, print in decline kind of thing, or?
Print in decline, yeah. It was tough when I started, but I think it's now really tough, to build a career.
Right.
To just find places to work for. I started working for all of the alternate papers.
Right.
Which have really slid downhill.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, are there opportunities online, or is it just not really your kind of thing? Or
I don't know.
Fair enough.
I don't know. Probably. But I think overall, it's really the kind of world where you have to kind of make your own opportunity or make your own thing. I mean, that's how you're going to be in a stronger position anyway. If you're doing your own thing and then someone comes along and wants to buy it,
sure.
Then if you try to please someone else, starting from zero.
Well, yeah, it definitely seems like a whole different kind of. I mean, it's a world where everyone starts with sort of the same opportunities, and the only way to get noticed is to be obviously. I mean, it's like merit based. You have to be super great, or you'll just kind of toil in obscurity forever, and
mm-hmm. Or have a lot of longevity. I mean, if you can hang in there for a long time too, then.
That's actually that's the other way, which I may not have the full range of talent, but this this is episode 49 here.
Damn it, we've been around
since August. I mean, I figure if we keep putting them out, somebody's gonna somebody's gonna notice at some point.
Of course. So. It can take years, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Matt and I for a few years did a little web comic. Just, goofing around. And for me, it was more of a writing thing. It was more just, I want to write gags and I want people to see them. Mm-hmm. And we did it for 3 years. And in the end, our only audience was like an 11-year-old boy. So
he was very passionate about it, though.
He was.
But stuff online, people can go back years later and discover it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing.
Now, I mean, do you really traffic in that world? Do you really, like, do you have stuff? I mean, I've seen you, like, on Twitter putting stuff up, like, your old stuff. But do you really, like, I mean, you count on people picking up your book more than anything,
yeah,
I would imagine,
basically.
Right?
I'm still, mired in the world of print, basically.
Well, there's nothing wrong
with
that.
If I had a really good opportunity, I'd probably, I probably would start doing a webcomic, actually. Maybe I should.
Well, I mean, something like yours would definitely be different than, half a million, trying to mimic Pemmy Arcade or something like that,
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. So it's not so much that you're, you're a dinosaur from the print age who's like, no, internet, rah. It's just,
Well, it's definitely a way to sort of get your name out there too, because I mean, it's so much easier to just send someone a link than to sort of tell them, here, you need to find this physical book.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think thanks to the thanks to the internet, my reputation has spread faster than it would. Definitely. Mm.
Well, and that's how I became, aware of your stuff, and I in turn spread the word to other people. You know, you hang on a message boards, Twitter, whatever, and you know, hey, check out this guy's book. Send him a link, a couple of pictures, and yeah, I'm there. You know, I mean,
yeah, and Fantagraphics has been great with that stuff. You know, putting PDFs online and all that stuff. They're really good at it.
That's really cool. So your experience with them has been good then? They've taken care of you?
Yeah,
overall
it's been really good. Yeah.
That's cool.
They're very serious about what they do, and, you know, when they say they're going to do something, they do it. So, I mean, you know, they're just great. You know, I deliver the comic, they print it, and so far it's worked wonderfully.
That's awesome. Fantastic. And it's all yours, right? I mean, everything you do is property of you?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. Yeah, it's like we were saying in the pre-show, Matt and I are kind of more familiar with the, you know, sort of the Marvel DC end of things. You know, we met on a message board for a prominent Marvel creator. And so, I mean, we know a lot about that kind of thing. But seeing...
Yeah, that's very different. I've done very little work for hire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not usually the situation I'm in.
Now, is that something you're against? Is that something you don't want to do? Or is just the opportunity hasn't come up?
I'd rather own my stuff, definitely. Yeah,
fair enough.
Completely understandable,
Sure. So, like, for instance,
I mean, given the druthers, you know.
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But, for instance, I know you did a thing for Marvel recently with Marvex, was it?
Yeah.
And that's theirs, right? I mean, that's you drew that and they own that.
Yeah. It's really only I've worked for Marvel and DC, and those are the only places. Oh, and Cracked. There's a couple things for Cracked.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the only places I worked for that were worked for hire. Every other magazine, the rights revert to you.
Well, that's cool. When did you work for Cracked?
I was in, I don't know, how many issues did they do? the new Cracked. I did, I don't know, I was in two or three of them. Probably two. I think it was in two of the three.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I'm thinking, like, when I was a kid, like, late 80s, early 90s, I picked that up just because it was there.
Oh, not the early real Cracked.
No.
Oh, okay.
Not the brief resuscitation of Cracked to kick off the website.
Oh, I was not aware they printed. I thought they just went straight web. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, it might even be the law. I heard years ago the reason National Lampoon sometimes does print stuff is because they need to have a print entity to keep the name legally theirs.
Oh, I see.
I don't understand quite how that works, but that's what I heard.
Huh.
Yeah, those things get weird. Like, I know characters sometimes work like that. Like, I know DC has to keep Wonder Woman in print or the rights revert back to her creator or something like that.
Huh.
There's a lot of weird stuff like that out there.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So you got Thrizzle, and like you say, like the sort of the gloss over is it's kind of a Monty Python-y. I can definitely see that, but there's a bit more to it than that, I would say. It's I kind of look at your stuff as you're a comedy writer who happens to draw. I don't really think of it as this guy makes comics. I think of it more as you write gags and you just draw them, you know, like you're a comedian working on a comic.
It's kind of been a journey from drawing through to comedy, sort of.
Really?
I mean, definitely what I work on more is the writing and also just getting faster. And I worry about that these days more than, you know, the art looking particularly splendid. I mean, I think also a feature of my art is that it, to me, it's funny that it looks like I'm laboring towards effects that I'm not making.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, I think that's part of the humor. So there's that aspect, but yeah, definitely, it is more about the last for me than, you know, an artistic sense of.
Yeah, I mean the sensibility I get reading it is you feel like a comedy writer. You feel like someone who, you know, who has a good sense of timing of gags of that kind of thing, and you know you just happen to be able to draw really well, and so that's sort of the way you're expressing. Is that at all accurate, or am I completely off there?
No, that's completely. I'd say that's accurate, yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, really, you don't see a lot of funny comics out there. And we've talked about this before. Like, in sort of the mainstream comics world, you have a handful of funny superhero books, and that's about it. I mean...
Yeah.
And yeah,
most of them take
funny.
Themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
Well, in publishing, I've also been kind of meeting around with book agents just to see if I can actually get, you know, a real book contract of some kind.
Uh-huh.
But the two genres right now really are kind of autobio and noir. Those are the really, you know, popular things.
Right.
You know, things where there's kind of attached meaning, like this means this.
Right.
So humor, yeah, humor is kind of on the outside. It's funny because in cartoons you wouldn't think that would be the case, but
no, not at all. And you go into a bookstore and it's like the humor section is like off in the corner somewhere, and it's like Garfield calendars and like, you know, a couple of decent books, and then it just it's like this dirty little, you know.
Right.
Well, it almost feels like that sort of with comics. It's almost like in order for it to mean something, it has to be autobiographical or like noir.
Right.
You know, like you can't sort of go back to that comedy thing because then it's not real. It's going back to, you know, the funnies.
But it's called comics.
No, it's like there has to be some underlying reason for it to exist.
Right? Yeah, it's like justify yourself. Well, I want to be funny.
And that's
not good enough. Yeah. I need a message.
And that's why...
That is kind of the critical framework we're living in. That's, you know...
Yeah.
I feel like I've been in alternate comics world for, you know, years, but that's maybe not even the right place for me because I don't think they're really that into it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to shy away from, you know, you say alternative comics, it's like, oh god, somebody talking about breaking up with his ex-girlfriend or so, you know, like I don't know if I want to read that.
That's where people say sigh a lot.
Exactly. And there's a market for that kind of stuff, and people love it. But I mean, you know, your kind of thing, right? Just then, when you said there has to be a reason for it, that kind of clicked. Your stuff, it doesn't have a backstory, and it doesn't have a, you know, a deep meaning that I know of. I mean, I could be wrong, but it's just there. It's just funny. It's just, you know, laugh. Don't think about it so much. You know, it's
laugh. Damn you.
It's so refreshing to see something like that.
We said in the pre-show, I mean, I was reading a lot of Viz when I started doing Frizzle, this British comic that's, you know, frequently just insanely funny.
Uh-huh.
And just my idea was, you know, if I could do something that was funny, then hopefully word of mouth would spread and it wouldn't matter so much that it doesn't fit into any, you know, preconceived framework that would make it instantly accessible.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and like I say, it's definitely... at least in our circles, broken out as far as, you know, guys who are at the comic shop picking up Green Lantern and Iron Man pick up Thrizzle as well. It's like, wait, this guy's funny. Awesome. Yeah, it's fantastic. And at the comic shop that I go to here in Seattle, your book is displayed sort of off, like there's an independent section, you know, with that, you know, Psy books or whatever. Mm. And, and your stuff is kind of set off to the side where it's like, you know, it's obvious they're saying, this is different. This is the good stuff. Pick this one up. Yeah, it's fantastic. But it's also, I don't know, that whole world seems strange to me, and I imagine it must to you as well. The way comics are marketed and the way, you know, solicits work and pre-ordering and all that kind of, it's just bizarre.
It is weird, yeah. I'm starting to understand it better, and, you know, that doesn't make me any happier, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
It's a weird state of affairs.
You have to know what you want to buy 2 months before you buy
it. Exactly.
It is strange, yeah, it is. I know. It's something I didn't know about, you know, a few years ago, and now I'm becoming painfully aware.
Fair enough. Well, so, I mean, you got Thrizzle out there, and it's, you know, like I say, it's a great book. It's I don't know, surreal, is that the right word, or I don't know, but it's just, it's fantastic nonsense.
Okay.
And, then I guess, led to stuff with Adult Swim. Is that how you got to... You got the Snake and Bacon show on? Somebody picked that up?
It was two writers actually from The Daily Show, Scott Jacobson and Rich Blomquist. And they called me up and they had written a Snake and Bacon script, which was pretty much the one, you know, we filmed. It was stuff taken from the book, which is all the animated stuff. That's from my Snake and Bacon book.
Sure.
And then the live action stuff they had written, you know, using the characters. Uh-huh. So... it was pretty smooth, actually. We took it to Adult Swim. They said yes, and you know, after the lawyers, you know, did their thing where they're just making fax noises at each other, you know, it was good to go.
Yeah, and that was another one of those word of mouth things. I mean, I don't know how it looks from where you sit, but there's a lot of
It was weird because it was released onto phones first.
Really?
Yeah, like...
Were they, like, testing a new thing, or does Adult Swim do that now?
I mean, it was a Verizon promotion deal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know how it quite worked out, but apparently you could get it on phones as of, you know, September of the year before it was broadcast.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
No, I remember because I follow you on Twitter because I'm a fan of your comic, and you had mentioned, hey, Snake and Bacon's going to be on this week, and so I set the TiVo, and that was that. But I keep hearing people talking about it who might not be in touch with the stuff that you do, and I wonder how, you know, how did you find out about this? Did they even promote it? I mean, was it, I don't know. It was kind of a one-off thing. So.
I don't really know either. I mean, it's out there. It's out there. I see it, you know, with both. On Hulu now, and
sure.
I see it available on the internet other places.
Sure.
But so yeah, I guess word of mouth, and I mean, Adult Swim decided not to make anymore, but they do seem very interested in doing something else. So
that's fantastic, and if anything like that surfaces, we'll, you know, we'd definitely be interested in seeing that. Yeah, but
oh yeah, well yeah, I'll be shouting.
No doubt. Now,
I did actually have a be able to do a pilot with MTV. We got through the script stage, but then it was killed.
Now, when was this? Was this recently? Or?
Yeah, this was about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow. You say MTV, and I think animation. I think, like, back in the days of Liquid Television and back when they had, like, Beavis and Butthead and that kind of thing.
That was part of what they were talking about when they were doing it. But I don't know. I think some things changed there, maybe. I don't know. They have a recent animated show, which I can't remember the name of. It's something like Popville or Rocktown or something like that.
Huh.
Yeah. When I saw that, though, I know my show would not go forward.
Right.
That's too bad. A lot of that old Liquid Television stuff was really cool.
Well, yeah, in that was an interesting scene sort of in the early 90s. MTV was, it seemed like they were kind of taking chances on maybe sort of, more,
yeah, very freewheeling,
yeah.
And all that stuff is really weird,
right? And even the stuff that stuck around. I mean, you look at a show like Beavis and Butthead that became kind of commercial, but it was still, you know, the message, such as it was, didn't really change. I mean, Mike Judge wanted to make a show about, you know, completely irredeemable idiots, and that's exactly what he made. And I just,
damn it, he did.
Well, I think that's an example, though, where he obviously is a very smart man,
sure,
and I think he came in with a short. Completely made.
Uh-huh.
So he kind of just showed it to them, and then, you know, got to do more.
Right. Whereas you're not really an animation guy, right? I mean, you were involved with that with Snake
and
Bacon.
No, not really. I just know how to animate myself.
Right.
I've been working with this friend John Kirimoto,
mm-hmm.
who also does a lot of print stuff. He has done layout on. Well, he did Here's a Book, and he has done layout for Adrian Tomei and Charles Burns and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, we just developed the thing of, you know, I'd do the drawings and he'd animate them. And they kind of cut paper style.
Right. So are they like an early South Park kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, kind of. Although I think what they're doing now is they have insanely, you know, advanced 3D animation.
Yeah, I've heard them talk about that, where they have, yeah, really sophisticated, like Pixar type stuff, but they're using it to duplicate that effect.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell it's really sophisticated. Whereas, you know, what we're doing is pretty simple.
Maybe like the old school, like Terry Gilliam stuff for Python.
I mean, what I do is I do a drawing, you know, for him, and I just make all the parts move, you know, in layers in Photoshop. So I give him a file with a lot of eyes and the arms and pieces and, you know, and the head and the neck, you know, separate so he can move them around.
Well, that's really interesting. And that's, I mean, that's how you put Snake and Bacon together?
Yeah.
And that was just, that was the two-man operation, right? That was just you and this other guy?
Yeah, he had an assistant in to help with the mouths, like, a couple days, but really, yeah, it was just the two of us, mostly.
That is fantastic. And then, of course, all the live-action stuff, which was fantastic. But, I mean, it's great seeing that show kind of get around, and it's one of those definitely slow-build kind of, you know, like, it aired in, what, May or something like that?
Yeah, April, I think.
Yeah, and...
Maybe May, yeah.
I'm still hearing people say, hey, there's this weird Snake and Bacon thing I saw on the internet the other day. Have you seen it?
Right. Like,
yeah.
It's just so cool seeing people sort of stumble across that after it's been around for a while. Have you guys seen this? Yeah.
Now, I would imagine for you, you mentioned Twitter. Of course, that's how I came to know you. I imagine that's helped you, right? I mean, as far as a promotional tool?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes me feel like I have a little presence on the net.
Sure.
You know, and just frankly, in social terms, what I do is so isolating. You know, during the last year, especially, my world has just narrowed down to myself, my wife, my baby. So Twitter's also been like a little social lifeline.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's definitely true for me as well. We record this podcast, but beyond that, it's, you know, I sit at a data entry job all day and I sit here editing the podcast, and, you know, having a little Twitter window open is just a lifesaver. I mean,
well, that's what people are making fun of today.
Yeah. Cause
a lot of great people on there.
Yeah. And my girlfriend is in, actually fiance is in Vancouver up there where Matt is. And we're working on getting her here. But for now, it's like I get to see her on the weekends. So, I mean, 5 days a week, I'm just kind of isolated in my house. And without that little window to the world, you know, who knows what the hell.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fantastic. But it's been great. You are a great one for sharing the really odd things that you find, I imagine, in your research and your, you know, digging things up to draw. And you've provided really bizarre, you found a site for fetishists for quicksand was a recent one.
Yeah, amazing. People were excited by they say quicksand and the melodrama associated with it.
Right. Or the other day you provided a link that that I've been clicking through pretty much nonstop since you did, for like really old, like turn of the 20th century, like
that's amazing. I haven't had time myself to go through that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I'm kind of stuck on the one about the anarchist, just the Russian strip about the anarchist. It's just fucking bizarre. Now,
it is crazy stuff. I mean, you get great stuff at the beginning of an art form when there are no rules and, you know,
right.
It's like, oh, you like to draw? Here, do a comic, you know.
Yeah, and you see these strange sort of outdated political sensibilities. And so, I mean, that combined with, like, as you say, the experimentation of, like, a new medium is just, it's fantastic.
It's really crazy stuff, yeah.
Now, a lot of
Daily comics were amazing for the first half of the 20th century, just...
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh, and I've seen and heard you mention this in other places that you're a big fan of. What is it, like Popeye and Dick Tracy and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
Now I can definitely.
Dick Tracy is in the 40s. Dick Tracy is amazing. It's more kind of flashy and weird than the movies then.
Uh-huh.
Comics was, you know, leading the culture.
It was such a cool strip back then.
It's so strange to imagine that that comics had that power. I mean, you look at the popularity of something like Dick Tracy or like Superman or something like that, and just you realize that, yeah, those are names people know now, but they just will never be as huge.
Well, a lot of the time, like a strip like that would help sell a paper, you know? It would be like, hey, we're the paper who have Dick Tracy. That's why you should read us.
Yeah, definitely. That was a huge selling point. And also with Hearst, it was a personal compulsion.
Mm.
That he'd have, you know, some artist working. Like, I think I've read that he had Harriman doing some obscure strip. I think this was before he was big.
Uh-huh.
For like a Florida paper, you know, it was printed one place in the United States, but he had to keep doing a strip just so Hearst could read it.
That's fantastic. Now, if you had that opportunity somehow, if someone came to you with a big sack with a dollar sign on it and said, here, draw a daily strip, would you do it?
Maybe. Opportunities like that are not marching around so much.
Well, sure.
That's a rough one to get into these days, too, though. You know, your daily strip.
Yeah,
there's so much limitations on it.
I guess I'm thinking more from a creative standpoint. I mean, business wise, obviously, it's not the most lucrative thing in the world. But you know, just putting that aside, looking at sort of the wasteland that modern daily strips are, just being able to. I'm thinking it as you could kind of shine in that environment. You could kind of be the one, you know. I mean, there's not a lot there anymore, you know.
This is true. Yeah.
Not a lot. I mean, you know, you would have the opportunity to be the one thing people were actually reading, because, you know, the
problem. Hey, right. Feels like though
reading the newspaper.
Yeah, probably not reading Family Circus at this point.
Yeah, like that genre though. Just the people who still read it sort of just want what. Coming out, like, I mean, a lot of people who are wanting to read like a good daily strip, that, you know, that's what they read comics for.
Yeah,
you know, you can get sort of the art displayed exactly the way you want it. There's none of this publishing limitations, like we can only print it this small, you know. It feels yeah. Like as far as you know, a daily comic strip goes, like the newspapers are just a completely dead end.
Yeah,
it's been a while since I saw a good one. I mean, Blondie, God bless it, still looks
well,
all right.
Yeah, he's still running into that mailman.
Yeah, he's still having the same problems. Funky Winkerbean, my goodness, did you see what happened to that? Where, you know, it was like a Doonesbury ripoff, but then they made it.
This trip is so depressing.
Didn't they bring in like the Brothers Hildebrandt or someone to do a couple weeks? Or no, it was John Byrne. That's right, John Byrne.
Oh Christ!
That's right.
A couple weeks to set the new characters. Yeah.
So basically,
very serious and melodramatic.
Oh God.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Jesus Christ! I can't even imagine.
Our main characters died of cancer, and we're dealing with real issues and stuff. You guys used to be a comedy strip. No time for that now.
I remember when I was a kid, and this was long after its glory days, but reading Gasoline Alley. And this was like the 80s when I was little, but thinking this is a funny strip, and for a few weeks not really seeing jokes, and then somebody died. I'm like, well, this isn't, either
funny.
Now it's hilarious, but
Am I not getting this? This punchline is not very funny.
No, why did that guy's mom die? This is horrible.
Yeah.
And I guess there must be a market for that kind of thing. I just can't imagine who's reading that kind of strip these days, or even in the 80s.
People who want to believe that comic strip characters are members of their family, pretty much.
Are there people like that?
It must be very old. I mean, I can't imagine that young people have entered into it so much.
Oh, honey, Dagwood's got making another sandwich again.
It's huge!
The thing with that kind of stuff is, it's like place filler. It's not really alive anymore. They just have a bunch of stuff that looks, right. Like it's the right shape. And, things look approximately like they should,
And
your comics page.
And you just responded to that. You just said, Blondie still looks great like it did, back in the day. So,
Yeah.
It almost feels like a lot of those writers just have like a big checkboard next to the thing. It's like, okay, Monday, Garfield crushes a spider. Tuesday, Garfield doesn't like Mondays.
Thursday, right.
Wednesday,
it's,
mailman.
I love that. If you read, actually try to read it, it's more like a Stephen King story trying to read the comics page. Like, if you try to read each strip, you will have drifted into a mental fog by the third or fourth time. You won't know, what's going on anymore. They're like, there's not really jokes in them anymore. It's like...
Yeah. And it's weird because there seemed to be a brief little spike, like, when I was a kid, and even, like, Matt's a bit younger than I am, but even in his lifetime, we had The Far Side, we had Calvin and Hobbes, we had Bloom County. Yeah. I mean, there were a few gasps left.
Well, I mean, Watterson was a guy who really sort of embraced getting as much out of the strip as he could. His Sunday strips are completely evident of that.
Yeah.
And he had some great, just artistic integrity and like what seemed like, crazy, I'm not playing by anybody's rules, but it was, looking at it
those
from...
Those strips were great, but then they didn't result in a lot of other great strips. They resulted in a lot of other bad strips.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like the many imitations of The Far Side that continue to this day.
Yeah.
That are just like, what? That's not a joke.
Well, let me just show you something really weird and kind of badly drawn. That's funny, right?
Look, a dog's walking, isn't that? Yeah. But
I know they must be paying those people so little that it's no wonder they don't look good or make any sense anymore.
Right. Mm. Well, it's kind of the same thing we've seen as fans of superhero comics. Like in the 80s, you had like Alan Moore and Watchmen and Frank Miller and Dark Knight Returns. And so suddenly everything goes all dark because, that's what everyone wants. No, they were just doing something different. And then there's a stream of imitators. And then somebody else comes out and does something revolutionary and everyone copies it again. I mean, it's just, it's weird that you don't have that sort of, like you say, like, one great thing inspiring a bunch of other great things. Instead, it's just like one great thing and a bunch of imitators.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, because these things that make a big impression, a lot of the time they just result in things being more limited instead of being more open.
Right.
A new set of rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Now we all have to be sort of dark and gritty and stuff.
Right.
Or in movies, we're still seeing awful, at least I am, awful Tarantino imitation movies where hit men have interesting conversations in the front seat of cars.
I definitely see what you mean there. And so now for you, I mean, obviously you've got talent as an artist and as a writer, but would you say it was you just stumbled into the right jobs to kind of be able to do your own thing, or did you, how did you get to the point where
it was obsessively hunting every job and not saying no to anything.
Fair enough. So, well, and here you are.
Averages,
so.
Really. Yeah. I am. There's just plain averages, you know, if you just go after everything. You know,
yeah.
A certain percentage will work out.
I suppose that makes sense. But I mean, and you might not be making a super hugely comfortable living or whatever, but I mean, obviously you're doing okay. I mean, you're doing it still.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's
unusual. It's very unusual. Yeah. I mean, almost everyone I know is teaches, which, you know, I never really wanted to teach, so that's not my thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of people I know, you know, get by.
Huh. I assumed, I guess, and I don't know why. From Twitter that you had like a day gig that you went and did a stupid office job and then you came home and drew, and it's fantastic to hear that no, this is really what you do.
Well, it's a Faustian deal because I've done a lot of work that I was not happy with, you know, that I don't think turned out very well, that a lot of crap work to just keep money coming in because of, you know. The law usually is the worse the job is, the more it's going to pay.
Sure.
Or the furthest from what you want to do.
Of course. So. But now you're in a position where you can put out your own book, and it's exactly what you want. I mean, it's your stuff on your own terms.
Yeah,
so you kind of have it both ways.
All the time, definitely. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's selling pretty well, and the future is looking brighter all the time.
That's good.
That's great.
And like you say, hopefully, you know, you may have other things in work for TV or whatever, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely some exciting possibilities opened up. You know, all that Pulse stuff, I was posting on Twitter, too, the Weird Guys magazine collection. There's going to be a book of that soon, so that should be fun.
Oh, very nice.
And, some other exciting possibilities in the works.
Very cool. All right, Michael, well, we have some questions here from the listeners, our loyal army of dicks. So let's get to this. Let's see. This one comes from Matt's girlfriend. Believe it or not, we have listeners. It's not just our girlfriends, but
okay.
This one just happens to come from.
They're just our most vocal
yeah.
fans.
She says,
Mr.
Copperman, I really like your art style and found your Kurosawa and Mifune, I think that's right, especially striking. I have a couple of questions for you. Are you a fan of Kurosawa's work? If so, what's your favorite film? Do you prefer his works from a specific time period, i.e. his early movies or his later ones? Thank you, Angel.
My favorite is The Hidden Fortress, definitely. I like his earlier movies better than his later, although I enjoy them all. The Hidden Fortress is just so special.
Now, what is this that she's talking about? I'm not familiar with... You worked on something?
Oh, she's referring to an illustration I did for The New Yorker of Kurosawa and Mifune.
Oh, okay. Fantastic.
Yes, I like Kurosawa very much.
All right. Next question comes from Adrian Boknivsky. A few questions. He says, my questions are all for Copperman. Fuck those two clowns who host this shit.
Thanks, Adrian.
Yeah. And you wonder why we call our listeners dicks. It seems like you're obsessed with the 1950s and Mark Twain. Is there any validity to that thought?
I'm not obsessed so much with the 1950s. I just think the graphics were better back then, so they attract me. Mark Twain, maybe a little bit. I grew up kind of near Hartford, where Mark Twain lived for a little bit, and where they just hoard him out. You know? It was kind of all-purpose, you know, lovable, fuddy-duddy. And I'll never forget there was this commercial on TV where a Mark Twain imitator said, "Hello, I'm Mark Twain, and I've been meeting a lot of these Eastern Connecticut Buick dealers, and they're right nice fellows."
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
Buick would Mark Twain buy if he was alive today?
I can't imagine a car, like someone making a life-changing decision, like what car to buy based on what Mark Twain thinks.
Honey, if it's good enough for Mark Twain...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Mark Twain was a real life coach. He made some bad decisions.
Well, there's also that, yes. Adrian's next question is, I know that during the initial paperback release of the first three Series of Unfortunate Events books, you did backup shorts that were pretty great. How did that come about, and how do you feel HarperCollins missed out on some great stuff by not continuing the format?
Oh, this is a loaded subject because, I've continued doing the comics up to book 9, I think. Mm-hmm. And then right now it's kind of in limbo.
Okay. Is this one of those lawyers making noises at each other things, or?
Well, not yet, but there was a lot of lawyerly involvement with this project. I was actually recommended or asked for by Dan Handler, who seems to like my work.
Uh-huh.
And so I entered into this, but HarperCollins, I don't know, I shouldn't say too much.
Okay, if you're involved in any kind of, you know, I understand completely. If there's stuff you can't talk about, no problem.
I will say this. Okay, those books obviously did not work out for them.
Uh-huh.
And looking at them, I don't know if you've seen them, probably not, but the original books are, like, beautiful. They're beautifully bound hardcovers, with inlay and, you know, really nicely laid out. I'm not a fan of that kind of illustration per se, but, you know, they're nice objects.
Sure.
And then the paperback is not a nice object.
Uh-huh.
It looks like crap. It was really, really cheaply printed, and they were selling it for $7.
Uh-huh.
If you go on Amazon, you can find like 450 copies of all the old books for a penny each.
Right.
So that's why I think they didn't work.
Huh. All right, then.
Now, were you doing adaptations of the stories, or?
No, I was doing my own new story.
Just your own thing in the back.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of latitude did they give you on that?
It should be great. I was very excited when it started.
Oh yeah.
But, yeah.
They just let you do your own thing there? Do they let you just kind of play around in that world? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. But then again, after, you know, they stopped printing them after book three, so it wasn't like they had to make any hard editorial decisions.
Yeah, I suppose that makes sense. All right, and Adrian has a third question here. This is the only question I really care about getting a definitive answer to. Sex holes or sex blimps? And no sticking a sex hole in a sex blimp or cramming a sex blimp into a sex hole bullshit answers.
Wait, what was the question?
Sex holes or sex blimps?
Oh, sex blimps, definitely.
Really? Well, I mean, everybody enjoys a good dirigible.
You're up there in the air, and, well, I don't know. I mean, empirically, you know, if this was a real situation, there was one right next to my house.
Sure.
You know, perhaps I'd girdle of the convenience. But, you know, I'd love to be in a blimp, sex or other.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can't get images of the Hindenburg out of my mind. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know.
Look, man, one blimp explodes and you just, it ruins you for blimps for the rest of your life. That's just sad.
Well, it ruins me for sex blimps for the rest of my life. I mean, you're safe in a hole.
Well, wait, I'm a little tired, so I can't remember. But there's a difference between blimps and dirigibles. And I think some are explosive and some not.
So. Ah, I see.
You and I are afraid of it for nothing.
Yeah, you're right. I apologize.
Go write a blimp.
And now he's just kissing your ass. We've already done that, so I'm not going to read this part.
I don't think the Goodyear blimp, you know, is in that much danger, probably. So they could do a sex version.
Yeah.
I mean, there's steel belting in those things, though. That can't be pleasant. I don't know. I'm grasping here.
Look, scientists say that you're safer in a blimp than you are on the ground.
Which scientists say that, Matt?
The ones I made up.
All right. See, I personally, I'm of the opinion that a hole in the ground is the safest place you could possibly be, but that's just me.
Sure, that's
it
fine.
It makes sense because when you're in a blimp, you're someone's legal responsibility, and when you're on the ground, you're, you know.
Right. Exactly. So that's, that would be my answer, but I mean, you were sort of the definitive, you know, originator of the whole sex blimps, sex holes thing, so I think your answer has to stand as the definitive one. So is there anything else? I mean, that's all the questions we have. Is there anything else that we've missed that people should be aware of, that we should let them know that they can purchase with your name on it?
Just Tales to Line the Thrizzle book. And I mean, I'm in a bunch of other stuff. I've been in some nice, McSweeney stuff recently.
Oh, that's right.
We postcards.
I saw that. We just had one of their authors on a few weeks ago and it was weird that you sort of tangentially connected to someone that we've talked to before, and what do you say? Postcards? Have you done any like covers for them or?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of covers, illustrated a few books. Gosh, what else? I was just in that San Francisco Panorama thing, which you know, the newspaper they did. It's in a big bag. I think I'll wait a year or two before opening it. But, you know, what else? Best comics of the year, 2009. That was a fun one. I did the cover.
Nice.
Actually, I think I saw that today.
Yeah, and we were talking about, I can't remember if it was the pre-show or not, you did a thing for Marvel briefly with Marvex, what was that? The
Yeah, I did a few stories. I did Marvex, and then I did a two-page Namor and a two-page Avengers, which I think is about to come out.
Really?
Oh, nice.
I'm not sure, yeah. A comic store in Chicago is actually flying me out in a couple, about 3 weeks associated with that.
Oh, very nice. What what's the title of that? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that.
I'll find that
things
out.
Are just blur right now. I'm 7 days from deadline on Threzzle, so I'm just exhausted.
Understood.
Yeah.
That's cool. And I know you were involved. Go ahead. No, I know you were involved a little way back, again, talking more about the mainstream type stuff. You did stuff for the Bizarro collections for DC?
Yeah, I was in the second Bizarro collection.
What did you do for that?
It was an Avengers story written by my friend Todd Alcott, who's a movie writer.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little overjammed. He put 9 panels a page, which to me is a lot of panels.
Yeah.
Especially with dialogue. So. Jeez. Yeah, I felt it was a little overcrowded, but, it was fun nonetheless to draw those characters.
And those were great collections. I have both of those, and it's a really great way to get guys like us who maybe, you know, people in sort of the more underground type stuff aren't really on our radar and kind of getting us to notice your stuff, which was great.
Yeah, the editor at Marvel who brought me in there was Alejandro Arbona, who was at Wizard before that.
Uh-huh.
Very supportive of me for a while.
That's very cool. Fan of you from the Screw days, or
no, more recent.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm just fascinated that you worked for Screw. I really need to dig that stuff up now.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is online. I mean, it's an amazing chapter in New York history, and
sure.
If you're curious, there are some DVDs now of the Midnight Blue show that Al Goldstein did.
Mm-hmm.
Like edits of his interviews he did with celebrities and so on. Like
right.
In the 70s, you know, it was okay to go to a porno newspaper and do an interview.
Sure.
You know, perfectly normal. Mm-hmm. So, but it's just amazing. There were open ads for whorehouses and just this whole atmosphere of sleaze, you know, that existed in New York back then.
That's fantastic. And you were a part of that.
And I was a small part of it at the very end, yeah. Just, at the end. Actually, when I went to SVA, School of Visual Arts in New York, they didn't have a dorm yet.
Uh-huh.
They do now. But they housed students in the YMCA on 34th Street.
Uh-huh.
So that was an incredible introduction to New York.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding.
Sleazy heyday. Yeah. The upper floors had glory holes in the bathrooms.
Fantastic. So, yeah. So sex holes, really? I mean, there were no glory blimps, right? I mean,
it was nothing that sophisticated, I think. No.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I think that's about all we have. Like I say, if there's anything else that you know, if there's any other way our listeners can give you money, I want to hear it. But other than that,
I can't think of anything. No. I mean, you know, the Snake and Bacon pilot is online. It's on Hulu now.
Sure.
So,
we do links, show notes for our show. We'll link people there. Absolutely. And do you have a site? You know, I realize I follow you on Twitter. I watch your links, but I don't even know if you like, you have like a blog or anything.
You know,
that?
I have a blog where I occasionally post stuff, or I haven't been paying as much attention to it as I should have, but
right. Boy,
doing comics and having a baby is just a wild, wild adventure.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I with all that going on, I do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been a pleasure.
Great. Thank you so much.
And take care.
Corrections and complaints.
So as we mentioned on the top of the show, we have some reason to celebrate here. Things are...
It's a big day here at Sarcastic Voyage Industries.
It is. We've made it. We have finally arrived.
Real.
There comes a time in any internet entertainer's life when a fan...
Our bar mitzvah, if you will.
We're men now. Who started that rumor anyway? There comes a time in any entertainer's career when a fan, or in this case, a former fan, comes to them and says, you are no longer as good as you used to be.
It's the highest compliment possible.
It truly is. And this is not a joke. Matt and I both reacted to this exactly the same way, which is yes!
Finally!
Because this means someone's paying enough attention to us that they think we used to be good and we're not good anymore. And
this is huge, people.
It is. And this comes from iTunes. This is an iTunes review, which we have encouraged you from day one to make. And we do appreciate all of you who have done that.
Please continue to.
And be honest, like this person clearly did. You don't have to kiss our asses if you don't think we deserve that. Say what you think. Tell people what the show, what you think of the show. And this guy sure did that.
Yes, indeed. Let's hear that.
So iTunes works on a 5-star system, standard, you know, how many stars out of 5. He gave us 1 star. And the review is entitled Losing Steam. 1 star. By Slash Bacon Pit, which I can only assume must be his real name.
Of the New Hampshire Slash Bacon Pits.
Yes, it's a very ancient, well-esteemed family. And he writes, used to be very funny. Now it's just not. Needs to develop some bits that are funny. His word, bits. Matt, are you aware of bits that have?
I've often felt that our bits were our strongest point, you know, and our wide selection of characters that we call our little sketches, our spoofs, our little plays, if you will.
Yeah, I will. So apparently, we need to develop more of those that are funny this time. I guess we're developing ones that are not funny.
All right, hang on, I'll make a note of that. Yeah. More funny sketches.
No, bits.
Oh, hang on.
See, you're fucking it all up. This is why people don't think we're good anymore.
You're the reason we fail, Robotham.
Calling your audience dicks isn't a bit and isn't funny.
Not a bit. It's not funny. It's just accurate.
It is. It's true. And
never not doing it.
And you know, if you weren't such a dick slash bacon pit, maybe we wouldn't call you one. There's a thought. But let's see. These guys have the potential to be very funny.
Oh, that's nice.
But they need to focus less on plugging the guests and more on finding actual humor. Now, let's diagram this sentence for a minute. Plugging the guests. We have talented friends. We know a lot of people who make things, who do things.
God knows we've been riding on their backs since episode 2.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I would say, you know, this thing has been largely built on the talent of our friends. They draw mm-hmm. us cover art. They come on. They're entertaining. There are days when you and I show up and we're, you know, we do this thing and we like doing this thing, but some days we're just not on. We're not here. And our funny friends kind of pick it up and help us out there. So, of course, we plug them. We say, you know, Corwin's doing a comic. Dewey's doing a comic. Scott's doing a comic. Pat's doing some drawings. I mean, people do things and we'd like you to know about it. But we don't spend a lot of time doing that, would you say?
I don't think so, no.
No, I try, you know, for those who have steady things on the internet, I try to run little 30, 60-second spots at the top of the show, but that's about mm-hmm. it. The only shows I can remember in recent times, this very episode that we just wrapped up would be one. The one with Maria Bastillos would be another, and the one with Dustin Long would be a third. These are people who have made it out sort of in the world, who have published, who have written books. And I think this is where we really get to the bottom of the issue here. Books. Mm-hmm. I think we're talking about books too much is what he's really saying. Reading between the lines here. I think we need to stop talking about books.
All right. Well, you know what? We can do that.
Concentrate more on bits and stop talking about reading because who has right. time to read?
More bits, no books. Okay.
Right.
All right. That's in the show planner.
Right.
Which I've always had and I'm writing in right now.
Well, it's well established you are the keeper of the show planner.
Exactly. This whole thing was my brainchild.
Yes. I also realized that in the Valentine show, I misused the word brainchild. I said that Annie was the brainchild of the idea. So that's another thing he should hate us for. But yeah.
Hope he's keeping as in-depth notes as we are.
Yeah. So slash Bacon Pit, we appreciate your input. By all means, if you want to contact us with more in-depth analysis, the email address is out there. We have a message board. Well, by the time this reaches you, you may not have a message board.
We have the corpse of a message board.
It's falling apart exactly as I said it would. Mm-hmm. Well, we have our wiki. We have our email. There are plenty of ways for you to reach us. If you think, you know, we're doing a good job, we're doing a worse job. I really wish you hadn't sold us short with this 1 star. Because if we get worse, which we were bound to do, where mm-hmm. are you going to go from here?
Yeah, you can't go any lower than 1. There's no 0 stars.
No, and if you're plotting our progress on a graph, you should have started with 2.
Which you should be, by the way.
Yes. If we're getting worse, we're bound to get even worse than that. And so
you'll need data to back that up.
You're going to have to go, I don't know, do they let you do no stars?
Negative stars, maybe? Maybe Ooh. We loop back around to 5.
Well, that would be nice.
like Super Mario Brothers.
Well, now this makes me just really want to test this theory, to get worse. We need to plug everything ever and not do any more bits.
All right. So. No more bits.
Right. So, yes.
I had this perfect topical political sketch I was going to do.
God, it was time now.
Now, but... I won't be able to do my Bob Dole impression.
Maybe next time. Bob Dole is a timeless subject. We'll be able to come back to that. Don't worry. But in all seriousness, hearing that we are not as good as we used to be.
The ultimate compliment.
It really, really is. Because, I shouldn't have to explain that. It's pretty self-explanatory. That is, I was happy. Matt was happy. We're happy. We're celebrating, as you can clearly hear. One more quick complaint that I wanted to address while we were here. It was a very small issue.
And then it's back to the festivities.
Right. Last week, I believe it was, I don't know, the LaTeP episode, the Pete Lenz episode, where Scott Zioko's sister wrote in. I mistakenly pronounced her name. I believe I said Shayna or Shauna. Apparently it's Shauna.
No, the correct pronunciation is Chozo.
Exactly. No, I believe it's Shauna, and if I screwed that up again, I apologize, but I said her name wrong, and I hate doing that. I've gone to great pains to know how to say Zioko, and it upsets me that I could not say Shauna.
Years of practice down the toilet.
So, I apologize. I'm also, Matt, between me and you, I'm not convinced that Scott's sister exists at all. I think it might just be Scott in a wig and a dress.
I'd buy that.
But we'll wait and see. She seems like a nice kid, and if she is real, then I like her a lot. And if she's Scott, I like her better than I like Scott. So there you go.
Stick around, Chozo.
So that's
gonna stick.
That's got staying power.
I'm gonna work at this.
So I think that's about all we have. I think we have some revelry to return to here, but we have now had our first legitimate show and something to celebrate in the same episode. So we're not even going to call you dicks this time. We'll just we'll leave it at thank you for listening. Thank you for telling us when we're not as good as we were, because otherwise, how would we know?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. And good day.
The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is published weekly and is available via iTunes or on the web at sarcasticvoyage.com. Detailed show notes, related links, and alternate file formats are also available on the web. That website, again, is sarcasticvoyage.com. Follow Matt and Al on Twitter. They are, respectively, @RobotMatt and @Algar. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com. An on-air response is guaranteed. All material contained herein is the intellectual property of Ron Algar Watt, Matt Robotham, and the featured guest, unless otherwise noted. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions, copyright 2010. He was a suburban child of the 70s. Those guys might not be as good as they used to be, but I'm better than I ever was.